This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
This is Glenn the Geek, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August the 27th, episode 2256. This is the day for the Western episode. Unfortunately, Tara couldn't be with us today because she's at a competition, and of course, they scheduled her for right at this time. So we're going to be bringing you a best-of episode. We're looking back to one of the Western episodes from 2018, where we talked about cowboy polo. We also talked about robbing trains, and we spoke with Lance Johnson, one of the leading cow horse trainers, and who just won another major competition as well. And we learned some simple, inexpensive horse training obstacles to build in your backyard. So I hope you enjoy this look back, and Tara will be back next month with a brand new episode for the Horses in the Morning Show, the Western episode. Enjoy. Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek, back in Ocala, Florida.
And I am Tara Carter from Clovis, New Mexico, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for September 25th, episode 2023. This episode is brought to you by Horseware. Good morning, Horse World.
Good Tuesday morning to you, and I do mean a good Tuesday morning.
Well, if you insist on being accurate about it.
You know, only somebody with perfect comedic timing could produce this much energy in one shot.
You gotta learn that your time in the saddle ain't as rough as the life in between. And the fence isn't there for you to straddle. And you can't change.
Well, good morning, everybody. We're back live today. Barely, I think, but we're back live. We're all tired. You're tired. We're tired. It's a tired day. You know how you're always tired the second day after you get back from a long trip? Well, that's today for us. But it's good to be back, and we're coming back to Tara. Hi, Tara.
Hello, good morning.
So Western Day is first day back here live on Horses in the Morning, and thank you everybody for your patience. I know, and thanks to Jamie and Jemmy and all the various co-hosts for putting out shows while we were gone. It's just nice to be back at home. It's nice to be back in the studio where everything is normal and not covered in dust. So that was one dusty horse show. That's for sure. I said to Jennifer, we're going to take all the equipment out. Even in the media center, there was, you know how it is at horse shows. There's just dust. Dust on everything and every. I had to go get my truck detailed yesterday because literally you couldn't find the outside or the inside of it. It was just covered in dust and mud, hurricane
uniformly
mud,
uniformly tan yeah.
dust. Yeah. So it was. It took them like an hour and a half to get the truck done.
We always travel with our our speakers whenever we go. We travel into a clinic and we come back through and security, you know, because it's this massive, you know, hard case box. They have to swab it. And we always think, I wonder if they'll get through enough of the dirt on that to get to what they really are looking for.
And does the dirt have anything bad in it? You know,
exactly, right?
You know, you were in Florida, so it could have. I mean, there's a possibility. Well, so welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us. This course is the Western episode. It happens on the fourth Tuesday of every month. Tara Carter is with me of Carter Ranch Horses. And, of course, Coach Jen is here as well. So a couple things. We will be back here the rest of the week live. So if you listen live, you're going to have something to listen to. Recorded, of course, you can always find on the feed. But we are back. Jamie will be back tomorrow. And the whole gang is back. Horse Husbands on Thursday. And then some new really bad ads on Friday. So we'll have that back as well. So send your ads in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. In the meantime, we made it home from the World Equestrian Games. We got to see some, well, the the top in the world doing some reining while we were there. And, you know, Cade McCutcheon was really the star of that. 18 years old and goes out and wins a gold medal. That's not too shabby.
Yeah.
You were winning gold medals when you were 18, right?
Yeah. I don't even think I was thinking about winning gold medals when I was 18.
No. Most people are thinking about...
Much less with a horse,
Boyfriends, girlfriends, what I'm going to do with my life, you know, and am I going to stop drinking long enough to remember tomorrow? So...
At 18, Glenn?
Well, you know. I was an early bloomer. So, Tara, what have you guys been up to?
Well, we've kind of the same old, you know, being at home and horses and students and going to shows. But we actually just got back from Florida. So unfortunately, we missed you while we were there, but we were down there. They do a Homes for Horses conference, and they brought Trevor in to do a clinic on the day afterward that we went down to Hope Equine Rescue and in Winter Haven, Florida, and 100 different folks from rescue organizations came in.
Wow.
So that they could better learn how to train their horses more efficiently and effectively for adoption. So that's what we were doing this weekend. And now we're back home and getting ready for the Snafflebit Futurity coming up.
Wow. Okay. That was a lot, actually. I'm glad to see those programs exist, because that's a lot of rescues that are in Florida, apparently.
Yeah. Well, they came from all over the U.S., actually.
Oh, wow.
They do this conference annually. And they come from all over. And then this is the first time that they've been able to add on an extra day and have someone come in who's willing to help them with the training piece. So
that's very cool. And I know he does a lot of work with them, too, doing this for various rescues. Now, was one of the pieces, you know, we just came back from North Carolina where we dealt with Hurricane Florence. And I want to talk about that a little bit in the aftermath of that. Did they do anything about, you know, getting your horses out in a hurry? About training, especially for rescues, because they have all these horses, and this was a problem during Irma last year. We have all these horses that are taken and rescued, but not necessarily trained to do anything, including getting on a trailer quickly.
Yeah, that's actually something that we do a program that it's a year-long program that helps all of the trainers with their really difficult issues, but it also helps their volunteers with some of the basic things so that every time a volunteer is handling the horse, taking it from their stall to the paddock or whatever, that they're handling him in a way that's conducive to their training. So for example, they're being really particular about how that horse goes into a stall. Did it go straight? Did it not push on you? Did it go in and turn politely, et cetera? So you do all those things. And then of course we have trailer loading built into that training program. And so as a result, you know, our goal is just so that if someone comes to adopt that horse, that horse looks at the trailer and says, oh yeah, I know what to do with that, and walks right in every time at home or, you know, wherever they go. But a side effect of the program was actually this very place that we did the clinic at. They took the training so much to heart that when Hurricane Irma came in, they had to organize all kinds of just trailers from the community and different people. And they came in and they loaded 32 horses in 2 hours. Like the trailers showed up, they loaded 32 horses and away they
drove.
These
are rescue horses. They loaded 32 in 2 hours. They did do a good job.
Yeah. So it's really amazing. When you do your preparations, then you're ready for crisis. You know, you don't want to live worried about crisis, but you certainly want to be ready.
Well, that is amazing because, you know, sometimes it takes 2 hours to get one horse in that situation. So,
yeah.
And you know, when you're in that situation, everybody's adrenaline is up, right? So that doesn't help the horses either.
Yeah, the horses know something's up, and well, I don't know that I want to help, but that's right.
Yeah, that's interesting. I just saw an article in Successful Farming, and it's called agriculture.com is the website. And it's what North Carolina farms need after Hurricane Florence. You know, it seems like when the Weather Channel stops talking about a hurricane, then it's over, right? In people's minds, it's over. But in this case, there are still 500 roads closed in North Carolina and South Carolina. That won't be reopened for a long time because they're either washed away or they're still flooded. I mean, we all saw the pictures of the fish on the highway. There are some of the worst flooding's happening right now in North and South Carolina because everything's starting to crest right now from last week. So we've had thousands of people lose their homes, and we've all seen the stories of the chicken houses being flooded and things like that. And there was this interesting article written by a woman by the name of Heather Barnes, who lives in North Carolina, and she wrote this article about what they're going through there as farmers. And I just want to read a couple things to you. She said, "We need you to know how prepared we were for this storm. Generators were checked, fuel and feed were stockpiled, animals were moved to higher ground, more than 20,000 hogs alone." Now, how long does it take to load them in a trailer and move them, right?
Yeah.
Knowing North Carolina is in Hurricane Alley, hog farmers began preparing lagoons in August so manure storage ponds would be able to hold as much rainwater as possible. Now, a lot of those did go over because they weren't counting on 30 to 40 inches, you know, which just doesn't happen. And she says, "We need you to know farmers stayed behind even when told to leave. There was no livestock on our farm, but we know many farmers who stayed behind and were there to feed their animals and make sure their animals were okay." She said, "We need you to see the photos and videos farmers have posted on social media, including farmers using ATVs, trucks, boats, or even helicopters to get feed to their animals. Workers carrying feed to poultry in 5-gallon buckets because there was no power to run the automatic feeders. Tobacco melting off the stalk, cotton bowls hardened to rain, sweet potato fields underwater, and other crop damage." And, you know, then you had all of the chicken farmers and pig farmers who were highlighted, yet, you know, you don't see what they were doing to try and rescue their animals. And a lot of people think that crop insurance or farmers insurance covers this stuff. And apparently it is very selective what it covers. I didn't realize this. It only covers certain crops, like row crops like cotton and corn are covered, but not vegetable crops like sweet potatoes or any other vegetable. So if you're a vegetable farmer, you've just been flooded, then
you're SOL.
SOL. Homeowners insurance, of course, recovers replacement of your home. Crop insurance does not replace the lost income from a damaged crop. So what you get back is your seed costs and things like that. But that doesn't compensate for what you were going to make, right?
Right.
And it apparently will take, after a massive flooding like this, a lot of farmers can't plant the next year. They have to wait 2 years for the soil to recover. Mm. So they have lost income from that year, too. So, I mean, I'm not bringing this up to depress everybody, just to realize that this isn't over for many, even horse people in North and South Carolina who are dealing with this right now. So we talked about it in terms of WEG and, you know, how it was just some rain and things like that. But boy, it's a lot more for a lot of people who are going to live with this for a long time and be dealing with, you know, the loss of their homes and farms and farmers and crops and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So, and she did make a point. She said, there was some inaccurate reporting on the mainstream media that drowned animals will enter the food chain, and that doesn't happen. Anybody knows anything about animals and processing animals knows you can't do that. And that crops that were covered by creeks and ponds and other bodies of water can't be harvested for human consumption. So all of the crops that were flooded can't be harvested because of what the water might have brung, right? So,
yeah.
And she said there was even a report that the fish that were along Interstate 40 will end up in the food chain.
Oh, my gosh.
So that shows you how naive or stupid some reporters are. So, yeah, that none of that happens. But our thoughts and prayers are everybody still dealing with all of this in North and South Carolina.
Yeah.
It's a mess. And I know a lot of horse people bugged out. And, you always seem to have more horses than trailer. I think it's a rule with horse people, isn't it? That they have more horses than trailer and more horses than stalls. I think that's also a rule. So it's something that you do have to consider and think about. And I know we've done many episodes on preparedness, hurricane preparedness, and things like that. So you can go back and take a look at those in the archives as well. So I'm glad that you guys are out there helping the rescues with that. Yeah. And our first guest is going to be with us here very shortly. But let's take a break for our title sponsor, Horseware, who we got to spend a lot of time with over the last 2 weeks. And Ice Vibe was one of their products. Let's hear about that, and we'll be right back with our first guest.
In the world of horse racing and elite equestrian sports, it's all about how to prepare and repair. IceVibe is a truly portable and highly efficient circulation therapy system for your horse. Before activity, prepare to prevent damage by using the IceVibe's vibration pads. Repair after the event by using the unique combination of cold packs and vibration to minimize swelling and encourage blood flow. And because it's battery-powered, IceVibe is truly portable. The essential and affordable tool to prepare and repair. IceVibe.
You can find out more details about Ice Vibe at ice-vibe.com or horseware.com, or ask your local tack shop or online supplier for more information about Ice Vibe circulation therapy from Horseware. Well, we have our first guest on here today on our first show back from our World Equestrian Games break. We have Dane Sundance. Is it Hovey, Dane, or Hobby?
Well, actually, the Irish pronunciation is Hovey, but Hovey's just fine for today.
Okay, good. Well, Dane, I know we have you on to talk about something that, to be honest, I'd never heard of, and that's cowboy polo. But I was on your Facebook page, and then I ran into Running Guns online, and apparently you guys also do some reenactment.
Yes, sir, we do Western reenacting. We assist the old six-gun territory, showing my age here because I went there as a kid, with reenactments every year. And then we do some on our own as well, using period dress and period correct firearms.
Well, I saw a lot of the pictures, and you guys do look realistic, let me tell you. It's a lot of fun. And, of course, we've covered mounted shooting on here quite a bit. And I also was involved with Ren Fairs, so into reenacting of a different era, but so much fun, and I do enjoy it. So you guys, how long have you been doing the reenacting thing?
The reenacting has been going on really since we started cowboy mounted shooting in Florida. You know, we wanted to do other things that either included the horse or just included some ground gunfights. You know, just we could go to more places and put on more shows sometimes, not bringing in our silent partner.
And how, you said you do these reenactments where?
Well, for a while we were robbing the train out of Mount Dora and Treveri.
Oh, yeah. So
the train,
I've been on that train.
On
yeah.
Yeah, well, that was us. So you're talking to Marshall Sundance.
I was on that train. And that train still runs, doesn't it?
Right now, it was taken again for some movies because that train was in 21 Westerns, True Grit, you know, the Appaloosa. I mean, the list goes on of how many movies the train was in. So it's gone right now, which means the lull in us robbing and having a good time. And then it's also used for Rifle Rails and History, where we do a Civil War reenactment there every September.
Yeah, and that's right outside of Orlando, right? Not too far?
Yeah, about 30 minutes northwest.
Yep, got it. Well, okay, well, that's very cool. And, of course, give the website out if people want to check out your reenacting before we get into the other thing.
Yeah, it's Running Guns. You can Google that here in Central Florida, or Shadow Riders. That's another group of us that do the reenactment. So either one of those, or just go to my Facebook page. We put the events up there all the time.
All right, very good. Now let's talk about cowboy polo. I think we've all seen regular polo, but I've never seen cowboy polo. What is it, and how did it start?
Well, it's a short facsimile of the refined game, so to speak. But back in the 1950s, a group of cowboys started what was called palmetto polo. And what they actually did was take palmetto palm fronds and then cut those down and put a boot heel on the end of it, whether they glued it on or whatever fastening device. And then they would play a game of polo, which was 3-on-3. They would divide the arena up in 3 sections so that you and your opponent couldn't go from one section to the other. You had to pass the ball and then take shots on goal. And then the game kind of refined a little more to, they were still using boot heels, but they might use a fiberglass stick, or as we do now, PVC, because it's easy to replace when broken.
So, and they're using a bigger ball from the pictures I saw, right? Like almost soccer ball size?
Yes, yes. And depending on the weight of that ball, it can even be a whole lot more fun. So you go down to your department store and get a real light one instead of the old soccer balls. It really gets to flying and kind of takes on its own course. But Johnny Ruff with Ruff Saddle Shop was on one of the original teams in Florida. So if you get a chance to go down to Ruff Saddle Shop, ask him about cowboy polo, and he'll probably just crack the biggest grin you ever saw.
So is it played the same as regular polo? We have, you know, we have to get it through two poles at the end of the field. How's it work?
Yes, our goals are much smaller, though. They're not as big. And remember, you're not going to have a herd of horses chasing the ball like a youth soccer game, so to speak.
Right, right.
You're going to be in those sections. So you'll have two horses against each other on the defense, then you have the center, and then you have the other end. And what you'll see a lot of times is a horse doing a blocking movement on the other one so that you can pass the ball through. And then, of course, if you go across that line or the horse pushes you, your opponent's horse, across that line, you would get a free shot on goal.
Oh, so
really, we have a good time with it. You know, if we've got two on two, we'll use the whole arena.
So it's kind of like icing in ice hockey when you get ahead of where you're supposed to be. It's like,
yes, yeah.
So is it
also too?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, but you don't need as much horse flesh as they do in polo game. And right. A real polo game, they'll have a string of seven or eight horses because they burn them up so fast on the size of that arena, and then everybody running for the ball. And ours, by keeping them in a section, your horse doesn't have that kind of physical pressure put on them. And the game is a lot more lower key, I would say, than that fast galloping. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense. So it means that you have to be more accurate with your passing becomes more important.
Yes, and blocking.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So, are there games popping up all over the country? Is it heavy in one area? And are people getting into it? Is it becoming more popular?
Well, I brought it back as a charity idea, and we, you know, would do it and invite people to come out and watch. And then we just started having some, you know, like back arena, you know, match games, and so many people want to keep it going that the Black Horse Ranch Resort out in Umatilla, Joanne said, hey, why don't you guys bring that here to our new arena? So we're going to put it out. You know, we might schedule some events just to come out and push the ball around. You know, you have to desensitize your horse, not only to the ball, but also the stick. You know, you're used to trail riding or you're used to doing jumping or eventing. This is a whole new thing when you're swinging that, you know, on the left or right side and hitting a larger ball now that a horse may think it's going to eat them.
Well, yeah, that's an advantage to having a softer ball, too, isn't it? especially when it hits you.
Yeah. You know, and we've had times where the horse kicks the ball, and it's better than the shot you would have had. So, you know, everybody giggles, and, you know, your horse just made a goal.
And that counts, I assume.
Oh, yeah. If it goes through those poles, it's good as gold.
Okay. All right, I was wondering about that. So it says you host Cowboy Polo Days in Central Florida. So when and where is that?
We haven't set up a date yet because we've been waiting on the arena to be finished. But as soon as that arena is finished, which we hope will be sometime in mid-October, because we also have a Halloween costume horse show on October 13th there. So we're hoping for a good turnout and a lot of horses and riders decorated. But shortly after that, we're going to get this going. And might even be looking for teams, you know, a 3-on-3, or if we have to do 2-on-2, depending on the turnout. And, you know, keep in mind that the arena is fenced, so the ball stays in play unless it gets hit over the fence, unlike the refined game of polo. So the game is, in my opinion, keeps moving. It's more close, more fan or, you know, friendly to watch.
So where is this arena that we're talking about?
It's on State Road 42, right where 452 meets it and Umatilla, Florida. So if you know where Eustis is or Mount Dora, Tavares, you would just go north on 19, head up 452, make a right on 42, and it's right there on your left.
Okay, so that gives us an idea where in the country it is. And what kind of horses? All kinds of horses?
It really doesn't matter. You know, we put on a lot of different events, and we don't really care. You take the Cowboy Mounted Shooting. We've got horses. Pasofino's doing it, Saddlebreds, Tennessee Walkers. It's the same thing with the Cowboy Polo.
All right. So
ideally, a lower horse to the ground is much better when you're trying to hit the ball. But, you know, we don't discriminate.
Yeah, 17 and a half hand warm blood, you better be limber to reach the ball.
So. Or make yourself a longer pull. One of the two.
Well, that's the thing. You can kind of make your own, can't you, in this particular game? I like how you keep saying the more refined version of polo. I like how you keep saying that, too.
Well, you know, I'm also part of the Lake County Sheriff's Mounted Posse, and a lot of times we'll go out there and do their opening day with our colors. I love to watch polo. To me, their riding ability is unmatched. You know, sitting on that postage stamp, hitting the ball the size of a baseball at a full gallop, that is nothing like you're going to see in cowboy polo. You're going to see a bunch of guys and gals hooting and hollering and, you know, knocking that ball all kinds of directions and laughing more than anything.
Do we stomp divots between the chuckers?
You know, we haven't done that, but one year we did get everybody out there just to see what your horse goes through. And they were really surprised walking out there, smoothing out some of the edges, because, you know, you get a little hoof divot there, you could tee that ball up and get some airtime.
See, I thought that you should make that part of it. It's a thing, you know, definitely should make that part of it. It's the one reason that half the people I know go out and watch polo, just so they can do that. And drink and eat. That's the other thing. You are going to have tailgating, right?
Oh, gosh, yeah, we'll have concessionaires there. You have to remember, what we look for is, what can we do to have a good time on a horse? What can we do to bolster that relationship between rider and steed? And by doing more things, it helps your horse be more rounded, and it builds that partnership that you can't get just by doing one event. And I'm not downgrading any one event. There are champion horses that exceed. But I find that by keeping my horse in different types of activities, whether they're low key, medium, or high, it makes them more rounded and they don't get burned out on any one thing.
Yeah, I think it's great when you're doing multiple events. Just like you say, it's so good for the rider, it's so good for the horse, and the different things that you try together, the better the partnership that you'll have. So that's wonderful.
Well, Tara, you ready to sign up? You ready to go play cowboy polo?
Yeah, I think it's fun. We've done some polo cross. We've done a little tiny bit of polo, but we've never done cowboy polo. But I think it'd be a blast, especially that part where you said you do a whole lot more laughing than anything else.
Without a doubt, it's comedy relief on horseback. If you're coming thinking that you're going to control the ball or control another rider, I want to tell you right now, that's the farthest from imagination. I hit that ball and what direction it's going, who knows? And a lot of working with your teammates and having a great time. It's really what it's all about with horses and me. You know, my grandfather was a unsung horseman and passed on a lot of stuff to me. And I just think this is a great way to bring a little part of history back, because there was a league called Palmetto Polo. And I believe the last game was played between Florida and Texas. Florida won. You can ask Johnny Ruff about that. And I believe Johnny still has his mallet with the boot heel right above the counter. So if you go down to Johnny Ruff's, you'll see it there. And I watch him just light up when he gets it down and talks about the original Palmetto Polo.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Also, a good way to get teenagers interested in some fun things on horseback. You know, I think a lot of times we go on the too competitive side, and we forget the kids just want to have fun, too. So, you know, it's a good way to get them involved in that as well. I can see.
You need a purpose.
Yeah, exactly. I that sounds like fun. Well, thank you, Dane. We appreciate. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's for all ages. And you can find out all the events we're doing. Just go out to Black Horse Ranch Resort, Google it on, you know, the web, and you'll see all the events we're doing. We've got an extreme cowboy, cowgirl race coming up and a grand opening. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Very good. Black Horse Ranch Resort in Florida is where you can find it. Thanks, Dane.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure. I hope to talk to you and see you soon.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, there you go. Get your mallet out, Tara.
Yeah. And, I got to tell you, when Trevor and I got married, we took a bunch of our friends on a train ride, and we set it up to have the train robbed horseback.
Uh-huh.
And it was quite the experience, let me tell you. So the fact that that guy has done that is unbelievable.
Jennifer, you're going to need a longer mallet if you're going to ride Nigel in this.
Yeah, I'm going to get the extra long telescoping mallet.
Yeah, because otherwise you're going to have to get a lot more limber hanging off the side of your horse.
Well, the ball's a little taller, so that kind of helps.
Yeah, that's true. It is taller. You know, it's not tiny, but it would be much easier to hit. That's for sure. Yeah. I know, and Jennifer's done polo a couple times, and it's not easy to hit that little ball with that mallet.
No, but it's so much fun when you do.
All right, our next guest is ready for you, Tara.
All right, very good. Well, we're going to go from the East Coast to the West Coast, and we've got Lance Johnston with us today. He's one of the leading cow horse trainers with earnings in excess of $800,000. He's a 14-time Open Futurity finalist who just won the Reno Snafflebit Futurity Open Bridal Champion and won the Protect the Harvest First Wild Spayed Filly Futurity. Welcome. Good morning, Lance.
Good morning.
How are you today? Where are you based out of?
I'm in the San Joaquin Valley in Central California, about an hour south of Fresno and an hour north of Bakersfield.
Okay. And have you lived there all your life?
Just out of a little town called Visalia.
Oh,
no, I haven't. I've lived in California my whole life. I was raised on a cattle ranch just west of here.
Okay. And so what?
At the base of Los Padres National Forest.
And so how long have you been in the cow horse industry?
Well, I think it's been almost 25 years now. I knew about it when I was a kid. I followed it just as a fan, but I think I've been showing now for about 25 years.
And how did you first get started in it?
Well, my parents worked for a guy who had a horse in training as a rain cow horse to go to the prestigious Snafflebit Futurity, and they went to watch the Futurity, and they told me all about it, and I was quite young then. I think I was 8 or 9 years old, and they came home and told me all about it, and I told them that's what I wanted to do someday, and I wanted to win that someday, and so that's how I got all started in my head.
So we've talked a little bit about rain cow horse on these shows, but can you just tell folks how you would describe rain cow horse and what makes up that particular event?
Well, it's a combination of three events, which is we do the rain work just like the straight rainers do. And then we do a herd work that is a lot like the straight cutters do. And then we have our unique event to our event. It's the down the fence where we have to control one cow, box it at the end of arena, then get a turn each way, and then circle it at high rate of speed, showing as much control as we possibly can. And it kind of sets our sport apart, the excitement of the down the fence. And to me, it's the closest thing in the horse show industry to real life ranch horse you'll see out on the ranches. And pretty exciting event. Mm.
And so just when you say it's, you know, we do reining like the straight reiners do, or we do cutting like the straight cutters do, what's the difference for someone who maybe knows straight reining or straight cutting? What's the difference?
Well, you know, it's, they get 2 years to train their 3-year-olds to do just one event, and we have the 2 years to where we have to do the three events, so they'll be a little bit more refined and more tuned in their one event than we will be. For instance, the Rainers will be showing in a bit one-handed. We'll be showing our three-year-olds two-handed. They won't be one-handed for a couple more years. And then with the straight cutters, once they cut a cow, they are on a loose rein completely working that cow, whereas we can help our horses, again, because we have a third amount of time in that event. So we cannot get to quite the level they can in that shorter amount of time because of that. So that's the biggest difference right there. The rule books very, very closely follow each other, even though there are a few differences because of we get the third of amount of time to train them. So for each event.
So basically, if you're going to take a 3-year-old into a reining futurity, and the judge watches that event, and then he comes and watches the same event, the same reining event, but it's at a cow horse futurity, he understands that you guys are able to help those horses a little bit more. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. There'll be a little bit style differences. We tend to have deeper ground because eventually we'll be working a cow in the same arena. And so we're not going to slide as far as they do. Because we're working a cow, our horses are maybe stopping a little bit wider because they're not covering the distance they are. Just a few little style differences because we have the cow work coming up after the rein work. But in the big picture, they're largely the same. We follow the same scorecard and everything. It's just that they're going to be at what I'd call just a little bit higher level because of being able to spend more time doing it. In the past, there's been guys that have taken 3-year-old snaffle bitters from the snaffle bit fraternity and gone on to do well at the reigning fraternity. Such example would be Todd Bergen and Chick Please. He went on from the snaffle bit fraternity to go win the reigning fraternity that same year. So those horses can go on and compete well at that event. But this day and age, it's getting so competitive that you don't see it as much anymore as you did when Todd Bergen did it, 20 years ago, I guess it was.
Well, I still think it's unbelievable what you guys are able to help a horse do in a short period of time. But really the goal of cow horse, is it a snaffle bit or is it something more? Like I'm sort of
actually, this day and age, it's getting to me so much about the older horse. The biggest money is in the 3-year-old event, the biggest single payout, but there's so much money now in the older horses. So everybody's wanting to preserve their young horses and make sure they have a long career. It's a huge emphasis in what we do. It's kind of in our bylaws, it's always kind of been written the old Spanish vaquero way of taking a horse slowly, but competition and money kind of always push things along faster than we would like. But in this day and age, we've kind of stepped back and gone back to our roots more. And so there's a lot of money in the older bridle horses and the longevity of these horses, such as the world's greatest horseman, which is either our second most or equally as prestigious to the snaffle bit fraternity to win. And, you know, those horses are older horses or range from 6 years old on up. You'll see 14, 15, 16-year-old horses who have had long, successful careers showing at that world's greatest horseman.
So tell us a little bit about the horse that you won the Open Bridle Champion on just recently back in Reno.
Well, I didn't originally train her. A friend of mine did who comes and rides with me quite often. I've known her since she was a yearling, and I've always loved her. And one day they were here at my place riding, him and the friend of mine who is the owner, the owner's Brent Stewart, and Terrell Heaton's the other trainer, who's a friend of mine. And I told him one day, well, she'd make a great world's greatest horse. And Terrell, he doesn't rope. And at the World's Greatest Horseman, you do four events. You also have to rope. And so the next time they came to hang out with me, they said they were going to leave her so I could take her to the World's Greatest Horseman because they wanted to see her go. And, you know, I rope. And so they left her here, and I had her for a while and then went to the World's Greatest Horseman. Unfortunately, I lost a cow and herd work to keep us from making the finals. But afterwards, they ended up leaving her with me because they wanted me to have a chance at showing her again at the following year's World's Greatest Horseman, which will be coming up here in end of February. And so I've been showing her since. And over a year that I've had her, I've won almost $30,000 on her. So we've been doing well.
Oh, that's great. So yeah, you're getting ready. We're looking forward to watching you then this year. That's super. So tell me a little bit about the other event that you also participated in Reno, the Protect the Harvest Wild Spade Filly Futurity.
Well, it was the first year they did it, and they were doing it to try to protect the harvest. Was trying to use the cow horse as a means to connect the public with the issues that are going on with the wild horses, and they figured that the rain cow horse is the best way to connect what's going on with the ranchers and the BLM and et cetera with the rest of the public on, again, the real issues of what's going on with them. And so they came up with this idea of this futurity and this competition that they could publicize to, again, bring it out to the public. And I believe it worked real well. They had several hundred thousand hits on their website, as I heard. And so it really got it out there. It was quite popular.
So how did you pick your horse for this event?
Well, they had a group of, I believe it was 12 last year, fillies, and then they weren't completely halter broke. They had been messed with enough to where they had halters on them. Some of them were better than others. Mine ended up being extremely wild. Some of them were quite gentle. They all were kind of different, all had been messed with the same, but you know, some are more wild than others. And what they do is they would take them and they turn them out in a large arena, and they would let them run and push them around on horseback just to, so you could watch them move and see how they just naturally handled themselves. And so I ended up picking this filly by watching her move and by how she was built. She had the shortest back of all of them. She was built up underneath herself. She was the one that would most naturally run and stop underneath herself when she was running around that arena. So I figured it would be easier for her to do it than some of the others, just by how her conformation was. I could tell that she was one of the more wild ones, so I knew that was going to be difficult. But
and what
in my life, especially in my younger years, so I wasn't concerned about that.
And of the three events, which event was her strongest, or which one did you feel like it just came more naturally to her?
I would say that it was, you know, the fence work really came the most natural to her. She was kind of, she doesn't really like a whole lot of repetition. She likes things mixed up. And when training horses, there's a lot of repetition, like a lot of things in sports. At an extreme level, it's just repetition after repetition, and our sport's no different. And she was not big on that, so I always had to mix it up. And I think the fence work, because of the speed involved, and there's not as much control as in the other two events. It's kind of play it by ear a lot of times. And I think that just kind of made her brighter and happier. And she enjoyed that event more. So she excelled more in that event than the other two.
If you guys get a chance, Lance has got a Facebook page, Johnston Performance Horses, and they've posted a video of his fence run on this filly. And what was the name of your filly?
Her name was Three Fingers Holly. We just call her Holly for short. Three Fingers is the range she came out of. So every filly that was in that fraternity had the range she came from with their name. So we just called her Holly for short around here at the barn.
And what was the difference for you trying to prepare a horse for this event that you normally have 2 years to prepare a horse for? And this time you only had 1 year, and it was with a horse that maybe isn't necessarily been genetically bred to succeed so well in this event. What were some of the biggest challenges that you had to overcome, either with the horse or yourself? Or
basically, for me, I had to remember how I did it 20 years ago, because back when I first started, I was a struggling young trainer. I took anything that I could get and tried to make a show horse out of it. Nobody would bring it early enough for me. I would get it instead of 2 years to train it. I'd get a year to train it. And I just tried to go back to what I used to do when I was younger. And when I started having success with those horses before I was able to get the quality of horses that I needed, and for the amount of time I needed, I had to do what I had to do. So I kind of just tried to think back to what I did back then and try to remember what worked, and be patient, even though it's really hard to, because you have half the time. But just that was the biggest thing, just be patient and remember what used to work for me, and it worked. And then remember that everybody was in the same boat. And, you know, back then I had to compete against horses that were bred to do it and horses that had the proper amount of training. Now all I had to do was just compete against, you know, I was on the same playing field as the other competitors. So that helped. I just had to keep reminding myself about that.
Good. Well, very good. Well, we appreciate you taking the time to join us, Lance, and we wish you all the best. Are you headed to the big futurity in Fort Worth coming up?
Yep, I leave in a week. We're headed to Fort Worth. We're pretty excited about it. We got a really, really nice filly, and then we're taking very smart choice, a broad horse that I did well on in Reno. We're taking her too, so we're pretty excited about going.
All right. Well, very good. Well, safe travels to you guys. All the best in Fort Worth. And thank you again for taking time today.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
So there you go. We're going to, I need to get, I'm going to get Coach Jen back on here, because she had something she wanted to talk to you about, I think.
Okay.
So we're going to get her back on. And don't forget to send your bad ads for Friday's show into Jennifer@HorseRadioNetwork.com. Jennifer@HorseRadioNetwork.com. Get your bad ads. Put really bad ads in the subject line so she makes sure she finds it. And you get double the credits if you actually record them yourself on your phone. You read them and send them in that way. You get double the credits for the prizes. Jennifer, are you there? We can't hear you.
I'm here.
Okay, good.
Yes, I'm here.
Good. I know you had something you wanted to talk to Tara about before we wrap today.
Well, I was watching some YouTube videos of horses doing obstacle work, as I'm prone to doing. And it got me to thinking, after having spent a little bit of time at Carter Ranch in Clovis, New Mexico, because you have all kinds of nifty obstacles out there of all sorts.
Yes.
And I thought, you know, a lot of people would like to have do some obstacle work or set up a little obstacle course in their own backyard or back pasture. But where do you start? And I was hoping, Tara, that you could kind of give me these are two or three types of obstacles that everybody should either have in their backyard or have access to, because each different obstacle addresses different skill sets at different levels. So kind of walk me through what some basics are that everybody should have.
Well, I think probably one of the most versatile things that we have set up is like kind of like a fan is what I call it. I'm sure there's a much better term for it, but it's 4 to 6 logs. And the only reason that we use logs, you know, you could use PVC pipe or, but the reason we use logs is they're sturdy and we don't have to move them all the time. So, you know, 4 to 6 logs, and instead of just putting them straight in a line, you fan them out. So, you know, they're more narrow at the bottom and then they're, you know, they start to expand toward the top. If you were
kind of like
at
a wagon wheel,
kind of like a wagon wheel, but really just half of a wagon wheel. So
okay.
You know, really like a fan is okay. what I would say, you know, like, you know, the fans that you unfold and then you use them to keep yourself cool. Those kinds of fans. So, and the reason for that is because you can choose, you know, you can practice going over them. And then depending on your horse, or especially if you have multiple horses, you don't have to adjust the length of the logs. Your horse can naturally pick the line to travel that has the spacing that they need. And then you can challenge your horse by, you know, taking them closer down toward the bottom of the fan to challenge them more on different spacing. So, and you can do so much with those. You can ride across them. You can pick two to ride between or back through. You can choose one to side pass over. So you can back over them. So I just feel like a fan is probably one of the most versatile and simple obstacles that we have. And it has so many benefits. So that would be the first one that I would say.
Wow. I never would have thought to do backing work with a fan, but you're right. You could do the backing work. And then you can also do for horses who are at that point, you could work in with some side passes because you can have them put one set of legs on in front of it and one set of legs behind it. You can side pass left or right. You
yes.
can do that. Oh, cool. Because I it occurred to me to try the different distances between the poles by going closer to the center and further away. That occurred to me. But now I even have more stuff. Okay. First one, yeah. I'm putting a fan out. Okay. What else can I build?
Well, I do feel like something that's relatively easy to do is to get 3 to 4 barrels, and you can just position those in so many different ways. So, you know, you can put all 4 down on the ground. You can put a space between them and send your horse between them. Like for groundwork, if you have a horse that has a hard time doing a nice circle, you could put 2 on one side of the circle and 2 on the other side of the circle and put that gap in between them. So, you know, they're kind of passing through gates each time they go.
Oh.
So they start to hunt where they're supposed to go. Well, then that cleans up the other sides of the circle. So, you know, you can put them together as jumps. You can stand them up and ride figure eights around them or weave. So I just feel like barrels offer so many versatile opportunities for folk, and they provide a focus for you and then a focus for your horse when you need it. So that would probably be my next best thing.
Okay, now, are you a plastic barrel gal, a metal barrel gal, or do you care?
I don't really care. We have all kinds. We have plastic. We have metal. We actually even have the pop-up kind. And then, you know, we'll take those when we travel, and then you can just fill them with dirt and they stay. We don't recommend those for the ones that you're going to, you know, try to jump.
that could teach a bad habit right there.
Yeah. They are funny, though, because the ones that we use, they have like this drawstring on the top to close it up. Mm-hmm. And the horses, once they get curious, they'll go up to it and they put their nose in the hole where the drawstring is and they like inflate the barrel. I don't know what it is, but so many of them do it. It's pretty comical.
Okay, we need video of that. I'm sorry. That's got to be hilarious. I was curious because back in the day, we used barrels a lot and we mostly jumped over them being English riders, but we also ran fast circles around them being cowboy kids. But one of the things we discovered about barrels is if they are sealed metal barrels, when the temperature changes, they make this lovely, loud, tinny popping sounds, which sounds akin to an M80 going off. And that's bad if you're in the process of jumping them when they do that.
Yeah. That would
if you're
be
using
bad
metal
timing.
Barrels, make sure that there's a little hole in them so that the air can escape.
Yeah. And I know sometimes you have to be careful what kind of barrel you get based on what was in it before. So ideally you get something that was food grade or, you know, that kind of.
At least non-toxic. Yeah.
Yeah,
so we're going to have some heavy poles or trees or telephone poles, rails, something like that. Then we're going to have some barrels. And one more that is a must have.
Oh, man.
I know what mine's going to be.
Oh, yeah? Well, tell me.
Water of some sort.
Oh, I was debating of saying tarp because that's a really good simulation for so many things.
If you can't do water, then a tarp. Tarps are so versatile. You can put them on top. You can walk underneath. You can put them around fence posts so they have to walk in between. And that's something I discovered at a recent obstacle play day that I took Nigel to. He is fine stepping all over a tarp. He's perfectly fine if I throw the tarp over his body and he carries it around, even over his ears. But if it is dangling and hanging from something and he has to walk under it where he has to kind of put his head down and then lift it up as it goes over his back, that is very challenging for that fellow. So I have to get my tarp back out because I hadn't tried that before.
Yeah.
Get my tarp out and practice that.
You know, that's one thing that if we have a horse that has a similar problem with that, we'll take a flag, you know, it's, you know, a stick that has a flag on it.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're traveling, you know, we'll hold that flag in front of their face, basically just, and it almost reminds me of, you know, the cartoon where they stick a carrot in front of the horse and the horse, you know, it looks like that.
Yes.
But then, and so, you know, they're building confidence because it's always going away from them, going away from them, going away from them. And then you just slowly close the distance.
That's a good idea.
And then eventually you kind of wait until they sort of are like, get this thing out of my face. Right. And they sort of push through it.
I like that.
And then they start learning that they can push themselves through it. So
I'm going to hold it out there. And each time he gets curious enough to get his face closer to it, I move it that far away. He gets 2 inches closer. I move it 2 inches away. He gets I like it. I'm going to try that.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah,
try.
Cool.
Send us a video. I would like to see
send us a video. Yes. I have to get Glenn to video though, because I am completely useless with my phone to take pictures or video. If I'm working with the horse myself, I need a GoPro or something. Cause I can't do it.
Yeah. You guys need to talk to Solo Shot. They need to send you one to try. That's what we use.
That would be a great idea too. You're just chock-a-block full of great ideas today, Karen.
Well, good. I'm glad to help.
And speaking of great ideas, one of our great sponsors here on the monthly All About Western with Tara Carter show is Total Saddle Fit. And Total Saddle Fit has this awesome shoulder relief cinch. And see, I get elected to do this ad each month because nobody else can say Total Saddle Fit shoulder relief cinch at this hour of the day. The Total Saddle Fit shoulder relief cinch actually changes the position and angle of the billets to prevent the saddle tree from interfering with the horse's shoulders. The center of the cinch is set forward to sit in your horse's natural girth groove, while the sides of the cinch are cut back to meet the gladigos about 2 inches behind where the horse's natural girth groove lies. And this brings the latigos from angling forward, bad, to becoming perpendicular to the ground, good. And that reduces the saddle's tendency to be pulled forward onto the shoulders, bad again. With horses that have shoulder interference without any angled latigos, it simply moves the latigos back to keep the saddle away from the shoulder's range of motion. And the secondary benefit to this shape, of course, is the cutback elbows. This gives more room for the elbow movement as well and prevents galls in the elbow area. So if your horse gets little tiny rub marks and it's a struggle, you need to get yourself a shoulder relief cinch. And they can be found online for more information at TotalSaddleFit.com. Go to your local tack supplier because most tack shops carry Total Saddle Fit products nowadays. TotalSaddleFit.com.
Hey, Tara, I want to ask you about the Solo Shot. So that's the one where you set it up like on the fence and it automatically follows the action, right?
Yeah, you have to put this like wristband on your arm.
Is that how it knows? Because I was wondering, how would it know what to follow if there's multiple people or multiple horses?
Yeah, well, I do believe that they have a deal that you can wear more than one arm thing, and then someone has to tell it which arm. I don't know. We looked into a lot of systems, so I could be cross-referencing something here. But this one, you just put it on, and you have to pair it. I mean, it all runs on GPS, so I don't think you can use it indoors.
Right.
But, yeah, we use it. I mean, it's kind of how Trevor coaches himself, is he videos himself and watches his own videos.
Because it's supposed to be able to do it from a good distance away, too, like, a couple hundred feet or a couple thousand feet, actually.
Yeah, it's really good, and I think the quality is really great. We spent the money and got the bigger lens.
Yeah, I was going to say there's two prices, like $800 and $400.
Yeah, and you know, we didn't want to, but we're glad we did. So it just depends. But we have a big arena. So if you don't have a big arena, you may not need to. But you know, we have some ground to cover.
And the you can even live stream with that one, right?
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. I think so. I'm pretty sure.
Wow, that's really cool. I hadn't found anybody that actually used one before. That's why I wanted to ask you about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I know people use it for all kinds of things, not just horses, but, you know, baseball and skiing and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it's this company, but the company that really got started in all of it was for surfing.
Ah, okay. That makes sense.
That's a really long lens. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, I'm on their website right now, and it looks like they still have they lowered the price on the lower optic one, and I don't know the difference between the two actually, the more expensive and the cheaper one. I don't know if it's distance or the quality of the, you know, the video. I don't know.
Yeah, I think resolution is part of it too. And that was something that was important. Resolution was important to us.
Okay, here it is.
What we do.
Yeah, the solo shot, the more expensive one, it does 65 times optical zoom. How does it determine, does it zoom automatically or do you set the zoom?
It does. It does. So it basically makes sure that when Trevor's riding, he's in a certain amount of, you know, that he's covers a certain amount of the frame. And so when he rides, it turns and it zooms in and out and... Yeah.
Hey, that's cool. This isn't a paid ad either, people. I'm just a tech guy, and I'm loving this conversation.
Yeah, and
why is this a paid ad? Come on. Yeah.
The other thing, too, is that it the first one we got, we had trouble with, and they immediately sent us a replacement. Like, I couldn't, you know, I believe that it's hard to get this technology right.
Right.
And their customer service has been excellent.
Oh, that's good. And okay, so here's the difference. So with the more expensive one, you get 65 times optical zoom instead of 25. So if you're in a smaller arena, it may not matter. And then you get high quality 4K video as opposed to 1080 by 60. So, or, you know, 1080p rather. So, you know, unless you have a 4K TV, it's not going to matter, right?
Right?
And then it looks like they're doing the same frames per photos and same live streaming. So really it's distance. So if you have a smaller arena, you wouldn't necessarily need the larger one. So it's a distance thing is what it comes down to. And then the quality of the 4K, which again, unless you have 4K TV, it doesn't matter. So very cool. I'm glad I finally got to talk to somebody that used one of these. So that's very neat. All right. Well, that's it for today's show. Thank you for joining us for the Western episode. You can get all of Tara's past episodes. Just go to horsesinthemorning.com, scroll down, and you're going to see a little logo for the Western episodes. Click on that, and it'll bring up all the past episodes right in the middle of the homepage of horsesinthemorning.com. And you can find Tara at...
CarterRanchHorse.com.
CarterRanchHorse.com. Do you have any clinics or anything coming up?
No, we're pretty much in slow mode now, just focusing on the futurity. So we've got a clinic coming up in November in Texas and one in Arizona. But other than that, it starts to get quiet this year.
And are the clinics listed if they want to check them out?
They are, yes.
Okay. Very good. Well, thanks, Tara. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow. Jamie and I, and Jemmy will be here. So we'll be back to a usual weekly schedule. And it's good to be back, although we had to figure out how to do the show all over again. It had been so long, I didn't remember which buttons to push anymore. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow morning.
Y'all.
Thanks, Tara.
Thank you. Bye-bye.